I walked out this morning in my white outfit, and my neighbor said, "Hi, how are you doing today?" I said, "Oh, today's the holiest day of the year. I get to go do my priestly duties." You know, most of the time I don't think of myself as like a priestess. You know, I usually think of myself like a teacher, you know, sometimes other things, a counselor, but I rarely do I really relate to that high priest. You know, I don't really think of myself in that role. And yet, you know, if there's a day that I feel like that aspect of leadership is relevant, it's today. Because on Yom Kippur, we really walk into the world of Leviticus, of the world of the high priest, the Kohen Gadol. It's a world that is pretty foreign to me. It's a world of animal sacrifices and rituals that we no longer do and haven't done for thousands of years. We still talk about them, though. And those rituals are performed by the Kohanim, the priests who are a lineage descending from Moses' brother Aaron. So it's this kind of, it's really kind of a caste of people, that kind of almost an aristocracy. And so we're entering into that world in just a minute when we're going to read about the priests and the original Yom Kippur rituals in the Torah. And I want to make two points about the priests before we do that. The first is about their position. The priests got some perks. They were elites, paid with a lifetime supply of first fruits and barbecue. And in fact, you can read, there's texts, rabbinic texts, that describe in great detail the priestly life and some of what that was like, and apparently they all had digestive problems. But they were also servants of the entire Israelite people and of God, even while they were in this elevated role. They performed rituals to cleanse the people of their sins and help them to forgive and be forgiven. They helped their entire community to move forward after inevitable mistakes. Only the high priest could ever have access to the Holy of Holies, that most sacred center. Only he went in, only once a year on this day, to utter the true name of God aloud in the center of the universe, which is, of course, where you put the Holy of Holies. But as special and privileged as the priests may have been, they were never above the law. On the contrary, they had additional rules and restrictions on their life choices. They weren't free to pick whoever they wanted to marry. They had restrictions about who and how they could mourn and things like that. So the high priest may have had the power to atone for the sins of the whole people, but he still had to obey the Ten Commandments, 613 actually, and he was still held accountable for his sins. In fact, he was not allowed to exercise his power and privilege to atone for others until he had atoned for himself, which we see if you read the chapter 16 in Leviticus. The first thing the high priest does in the series of many rituals on Yom Kippur, first he atones for himself before he can go on to atone for others. So this basic idea is that even the most powerful leader must follow the law. Even the most powerful leader should be held accountable for his mistakes. For some reason, I felt like I had to say that out loud today. For thousands of years, the ritual forms of the Jewish people may have changed in radical ways, but never have we strayed from the principle that all human beings, no matter how powerful, must recognize a higher authority than their own desires. And we must live by the rule of law. Even the high priest was ultimately a servant of the people and of God, and it was not the other way around. So that's my first point. The other thing I want to say about priests really comes from a text in the Mishnah, and which is a rabbinic text after the Torah was written, that goes into great detail about what would happen on this day for the priest. So according to that source, preparations began 7 days ago when the priest separated from his family and began intense study. And last night he wouldn't have slept up all night studying. Today he would have gone through multiple immersions and clothing changes, and then a series of confessions and sacrifices, first for himself and his household, as I said, then for everybody in the entire community. And each time he would speak the confessional formula, he would say the ineffable name of God, pronounced aloud only one time every year on this day. And when the people, he would be inside saying this, and the people outside would hear it, and the crowd outside would fall on their faces in a full prostration and say, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuto Leolam Va'ed, blessed be the glorious name, God reigns forever and ever. Again, this idea that here's this figure doing this magic, very powerful, and yet God is the one with the kingdom, right? God is the one in charge. That's the authority, lest we get confused. At the center of these rituals, the priest would enter into the Holy of Holies, which is supposedly built on the Evan Shtiyah, the foundation stone of the universe, and there he would offer incense and a brief prayer. Afterward, the scapegoat would be taken into the wilderness with the sins of the Israelites on its head. The priest would then read aloud from the Torah, burn the afternoon incense, trim the lamps, repeat a series of immersions and clothing changes, return home to feast with friends and family, and on his way there lead a grand procession as the hero that saved the people from their sins that year. Maybe we can bring that one back. So a few years ago, I was reading through this text, and I was struck by a detail I had never noticed before, and maybe you caught it in there, I don't know. It was a lot of details. On the way out, the priest stops and trims the lamps. Presumably, it's a very mundane, daily type of like maintenance activity, and I imagine it's the equivalent of something like unload the dishwasher, you know. So the day would go something like this. Purify your own sins through elaborate ritual sacrifices. Speak the ineffable name of God at the center of the universe. Cleanse the sins of the nation. Unload the dishwasher. Immerse and change clothing. Greet the people for a massive national celebration. So what is that? What is that doing in there? And it's striking. So to me, the way I understand that is it's a reminder. Even in the midst of this lofty, once a year, holy, holy day, holy, holy name of God, holy, holy words, all this collective breast beating about the gigantic problems of our time, especially this year we're doing that. And even so, this detail reminds us that we have responsibilities, tiny little practical things that we need to do to keep making the world go round, you know? Feeding the kids, calling a sick relative, doing the laundry, even though your partner usually takes care of it. And so it is that the high priest trims the lamps. He does his part to maintain the nuts and bolts of the sacred space, and he, in so doing, reminds us that those tiny ways that we care for the practical, real-life, day-to-day responsibilities, those things also matter. And even as we're aspiring to huge transformations, we are also given permission to pay attention to the micro level of the little things in our lives that can ultimately make a difference and support all the rest of our highfalutin rituals and lofty aspirations.